We are in the book of Deuteronomy, the final address of Moses the prophet, given in the 11th month, first day of that month, of the 40th year of the Exodus, there at the plains of Moab, just across from Jericho. Moses begins his final address by reminding them of how they ended up with the extended wilderness wandering because of sinful rebellion way back in year 2 of the Exodus. And then he starts describing in detail how the Israelites in the 40th year began their journey past Edom, past Moab, past Ammon, with the intention of crossing over to the plains of Moab and using that as their entry point into the land of Canaan. Last session, though, we had Moses retell the story of how the Ammonites that had control of the eastern shore of the northern Dead Sea, all of the Jordan Valley, and the eastern side of the Sea of Galilee, and the eastern side of the upper Jordan River, all the way up to the foothill of the foothills of Mount Hermon. All of that territory was under the control of Ammonites, which are just another category of Canaanite. And that God already knew that these Canaanites, these Amorites, were part of that group that was so sinful that they needed to be evicted, or, if they tried to stay, executed. And so even though Moses tried to have a peaceful crossing of Sihon's territory, Sihon attacked, was defeated, and all of that property becomes Israeli annexed territory. Then Og, up in the north, up in the Golan, as we call it now, he attacks and is defeated, killed, and all his property ends up belonging to the Israelis in an annexed part of the Promised Land. And the last thing we were talking about is how Og was one of the final Rephaim, or giants, living on this eastern side of the Jordan Valley. And his bed was 12 feet long and 6 feet wide, which seems to indicate that he must have been 10 or 11 feet tall himself. So he was a big guy. But God still help the Israelites defeat him. So we pick up the story in chapter 3 of Deuteronomy, verse 12. Remember, Moses is the one that's recalling all of these things. When we took possession of this land at that time, now remember, that's only a few months ago as Moses is giving this address, I gave to the Reubenites and the Gadites the territory beginning at Aroer, which is on the edge of the valley of the Arnon, so that's down on the east side of the Dead Sea, midpoint on the east side of the Dead Sea. And then half of the hill country of Gilead with its cities, so that takes us up past the Jabbok River, and probably about three-quarters of the way up the Jordan Valley on the east side. That's where Gilead is at. And so we're about halfway up. This is actually describing the Sihon territory, how that's given over then to one of the tribes that wants to live on this side. The rest of Gilead and all Bashan, so the rest that goes up past the eastern side of the Sea of Galilee and then up to the foothills of Mount Hermon, he says, The rest of Gilead and all Bashan, the kingdom of Og, that is, all the region of the Argob, I gave it to the half-tribe of Manasseh. So that's the two tribes that get chunks here. All that portion of Bashan is called the land of Rephaim, or giants. Rephaim literally has to do with rising up again, I think. Let me double check that real quick here on the fly. It is based on a Hebrew verb that has the idea of being healed or coming back to life again or being reinvigorated, that sort of thing. And so probably the Hebrew word was focusing in on how vibrant these giants were, how invigorating they were in their life force. So all that portion of Bashan is called the land of the Rephaim. Yair, the Manassite, took all the region of Argob, that is Bashan, as far as the border of the Geshurites, and the Maacathites, and called the villages after his own name, Havot, Yair. The dawning, I think, of Yair, or the encampment of Yair, as it is to this day. So now we've got some specific people that are well known to those reading this, hearing this, but reading it later, that ended up with that property. To Machir, I gave Gilead, and to the Reubenites and the Gadites, I gave the territory from Gilead as far as the valley of the Arnon, with the middle of the valley as a border as far as the river Yabuk. The border of the Ammonites, the Arabah also, with the Jordan as its border, from Kinneroth, which is the most ancient name of the Sea of Galilee. It has to do with a harp, which, if you look at the Sea of Galilee, it kind of has the shape of a harp. As far as the Sea of the Arabah, the Salt Sea, we call it the Dead Sea today, under the slopes of Pisgah on the east. Pisgah is the mountain ridge that is on the northeast corner of the Dead Sea Basin. Verse 18, I commanded you at that time, saying, He who is your God has given you this land to possess. All your men of valor shall cross over armed before your brothers and people of Israel. Only your wives, your little ones, and your livestock. I know that you have much livestock, which is really interesting when you think about this being the transcription of a verbal address. So he kind of repeats himself, I know you've got a lot of livestock because you told me so, right? They shall remain in the cities that I have given you, until he who is gives rest to your brothers, that is the other tribes, as to you, and they also occupy the land that he who is your God gives them beyond the Jordan. Then each of you may return to the possession which I have given you. So this was the agreement struck only a matter of weeks earlier, that these tribes will be getting their territory on this eastern side of the Jordan Dead Sea Valley. But there's a condition. They have to send a huge representation of their military, their militia people, across the Jordan as a vanguard in the takeover of the Promised Land. Once all the tribes on the western side of the Jordan Valley have gotten their territory sorted out, then they will be released to go back home. That was the deal that was struck, and they agreed to it quite willingly. Verse 21, And I commanded Joshua at that time, Your eyes have seen all that he who is your God has done to these two kings. So will he who is due to all the kingdoms into which you are crossing. You shall not fear them, for it is he who is your God who fights for you. So this was a test run of sorts. It is the first fruits of battle against the Canaanites that God has been telling them was coming. And it has gone spectacularly. Doesn't seem like there's casualties on the Israeli side, only on the Canaanite side. And so Joshua is reminded at this time, this is the way that it can go once you cross the river. If you just follow God's lead, you don't have to be afraid of those Amorites, those Canaanites that are occupying big cities, strong cities on the other side of the Jordan. God will take care of them just like he took care of Sihon and Og. Trust him. Now, verse 23. This is a bit of Moses' heart showing. I pleaded with he who is at this time, saying, oh, he who is God, you have only begun to show your servant your greatness and your mighty hand. So you've only just got started showing me the power that you have in meting out judgment, justice against the Canaanites, dispossessing them, and moving your people into those places as you promised. For what God is there in heaven or on earth who can do such works and mighty acts as yours? So there is no supposed God, no God wannabe fallen angel that can do this sort of stuff. And then he says this, verse 25, please let me go over and see the good land beyond the Jordan, that good hill country and Lebanon. So he makes a request, God, please let me cross. Let me get into the promised land. Let me see you do the things over there that you're doing on this side. But, verse 26, he who is was angry with me because of you. Now, that's very human, isn't it? To blame others for something you did. Because there's no doubt about that. God called Moses on the carpet for allowing himself to become irritated with the Israelites about the water being brought out of the rock at the very beginning of this 40th year. Moses was directed to go out and speak to the rock, and water would come out of it. And he goes out there and whacks the rock and says, how many more times are we going to have to help you rebels out? And didn't give glory to God like he should have. So here he is, months later. He's not going to be allowed to go into the promised land. He asks God, please let me go. And when God tells him no, it makes Moses sad and mad all over again. And he wants to share the blame around, that if you Israelis hadn't been that way, I wouldn't have got mad and got myself in trouble, right? So let's read it again. The Bible is real history. It tells us about people, warts and all, if you will. Verse 26, but he who is was angry with me because of you and would not listen to me. So no, God's not going to excuse Moses from the punishment. He who has said to me, enough from you. Do not speak to me of this matter again. Now, I don't know about you, but I know that when I had a parent or an authority figure tell me no and don't talk about this anymore, that they were serious. They didn't want to hear another word out of my mouth. And so Moses has just been told by God, knock it off. You will have your penalty Don't bring it up again. So, verse 27, he repeats the instructions that Moses has been given, something that apparently is going to happen right there at the tail end of his life. Go up to the top of Pisgah. Now, Pisgah is part of a ridgeline that is overlooking the Israeli encampment in the plains of Moab. This ridgeline is to the northeast of the Dead Sea. And so it's a perfect vantage point to look up and down the Dead Sea Jordan Valley. You can see a very long way. I am not altogether certain that you can see all the way to the Med, but it's possible that that might be the case. But here is what he's told. You lift up your eyes westward, northward, southward, and even eastward. And the reason he looks eastward is because the property behind him is also Israeli property now because of Sihon's destruction. You can look at it with your eyes, for you shall not go over this Jordan. So no, I am not suspending your sentence. You will die over here on the east side. You can look at the west side with all you want. And I think it's possible that God gave him supernatural vision in order to see very well all the wonderful things over there. But no, he's not going to cross. Instead, he's reminded to help the new guy. Verse 28, but charge Joshua and encourage and strengthen him, for he shall go over at the head of this people, and he shall put them in possession of the land that you shall see. Now, Joshua is probably in his mid-80s at this point. The reason I think that is because Caleb, his partner spy from 40 years back, was like 40-something. He was in his mid-40s, and so I think they're probably roughly the same age. So that would make them both in their mid-80s right now. Same age that Moses was when he started, or roughly the same age Moses was when he started the people on this Exodus experience. And so Joshua is going to be the leader once they get into the promised land. Verse 29 finishes this retelling of the story up to this point in the 40th year of the Exodus. So we remained in the valley opposite Beth Peor. Now, Beth Peor is probably a little mountain ridge nearby Pisgah that was the place of the great pagan worship event that ended up getting a whole bunch of Israelis killed earlier in the 40th year of the Exodus. Chapter 4 now. Moses is now going to move into the next part of his address, the part that he'll spend most of his time on, and that is talking about God's word, God's law, how they're supposed to live when they get into the promised land. And so this is the part that gives the book its Greek name, Second Law, Deuteronomy. Chapter number 4. And now, O Israel, listen to the statutes and the rules that I am teaching you, and do them that you may live and go in and take possession of the land that he who is the God of your fathers is giving you. So here are the rules. Pay attention to them, because by doing them, you will live. You won't get yourself executed. Verse 2, you shall not add to the word that I command you, nor take from it, that you may keep the commandments of he who is your God that I command you. So don't go overboard and make it tighter and tougher than it's supposed to be. That's exactly what the Pharisees did, didn't they? Right? And they got in trouble over that. And don't liberalize it. Don't say, well, that's not important, or that's not important. Don't worry about that. Just do it straight up. So here it is going to be a retelling of the legal system that the Israelis are supposed to live by in their promised land. Some of them are good principles for any people group, but some of them are very specific to the Israeli people. Verse 3, your eyes have seen what he who is did at Baal Peor, for he who is your God destroyed from among you all the men who followed the Baal of Peor. Now, Baal is a Canaanite word. It means master, Lord, and it is often applied to the senior god of the Canaanite pantheon. It can be applied to other gods as well, but typically it's the big guy, Baal himself, the thunder and lightning god. So he says, you guys know how a whole bunch of Israelis ended up dying in that fiasco. Verse 4, but you who held fast to he who is your God are all alive today. So you are alive because you followed the rules. Verse 5, see, I have taught you statutes and rules as he who is my God commanded me that you should do them in the land that you are entering to possess, to take possession of it. Keep them and do them. For that will be your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the peoples, who when they hear all these statutes will say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. So this legal structure that he is going to restate is intended to help the Israelis avoid sinful practices and the death that comes with that, have longer lives, therefore, and to also show that they've got a good relationship with the Creator God and set an example for other nations, other ethnic groups out there that might be looking for such a kind and compassionate and loving God. Verse 7, for what great nation is there that has a God so near to it as he who is our God is to us? Whenever we call upon him, what great nation is there that has statutes and rules so righteous as all this law that I have set before you today? So the Israelis have God right there in the camp, at the center of their encampment. That's how close he is to them. And he has given them fair laws, laws that are to help people live good, long, healthy lives. But such rules have to be adhered to in order to be of any use. Verse 9, only take care and keep your soul diligently. From time to time, I'll remind you of this. The word soul is a reference to individuality. So everybody is responsible for themselves. Everybody makes their own free will choices. And so take care, keep your soul diligently. Take responsibility for yourself, lest you forget the things that your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life. Learn from history. I cannot tell you how much I stress this as I'm teaching the Word of God. We must study history to learn from its mistakes, to learn from its right choices, because we want to make the right choices in our own life, and not repeat the mistakes of the past. That's how important history is to us. So make them known to your children and to your children's children. So we have to teach history to our kids and our grandkids so that they will learn from the mistakes of the past and have an example of the good things of the past. Verse 10, how on the day that you stood before He who is your God at Horeb, which is just another name for Mount Sinai, He who is said to me, gather the people to me that I may let them hear my words, so that they may learn to fear me all the days that they live on the earth, and that they may teach their children so. So now we're starting to introduce the next historical event that he wants to talk about, which is God's appearance to the Israeli people at Mount Sinai when he spoke aloud to them the first 10 representative commandments of his law. And so God did that on purpose, Moses said, to scare you into understanding how serious he was. That if you will fear him, that's the beginning of wisdom. That's the beginning of a good lifestyle. And so you came near and you stood at the foot of the mountain while the mountain burned with fire to the heart of heaven, wrapped in darkness, cloud, and gloom. And then he who is spoke to you out of the midst of the fire. You heard the sound of the words, but you saw no form. There was only a voice. And so now Moses says, I want to remind you what it was like being there that day at Mount Sinai when the formless God, the invisible God, came and spoke to us. And of course, those that are in their later 40s and in their 50s that Moses is talking to, they were there that day. They will remember it. It'll be one of the big events of their earlier life.